This is As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the show where we bring you the stories behind the stories that matter in your life. We'll tell you something maybe you didn't know. Hear from the experts, the authors, the others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. But in every case, we call it As We See It. On today's show, Kings and Blackhawks tonight, Game 2. We'll take you live to Chicago. What can you learn from rock stars and make your career take off? And talk about taking off. A special treat today, the pole sitter for this Sunday's Indy 500 joins us. Let's meet the friends. She battled the backup on the 110 to get here. It's Jennifer Bjorklund.
Oh, a deer hit by a car. That didn't happen on the 110, but it did happen in Minnesota. Well, she's gone, but her fawn survives. The roadside heroics coming up.
Ooh. Giving the illusion of going political is Jay Campadonia.
Phil, the president voiced his anger today over the troubled VA healthcare system. Well, you won't believe who Obama ticked off when his speech hit TV.
And he cannot whip his hair back and forth. It's Chris Martin.
Phil, do you remember that picture of a young Willow Smith laying in bed with a shirtless 20-year-old?
I do.
Well, wait till you hear what the state authorities have decided to do about it.
The authorities are involved. Wow. All right, that's all coming up. Let's get started. You're going to start with the roadside fawn, are you?
Am I going to start with that?
No, I don't know. I think you should wait.
Let's wait on that. Let's talk about something else that is probably not going to survive.
The guy on death row in Missouri?
Yeah. Have you heard of this one? We've been talking about these death row stories and the cocktails that they're trying to use as far as drugs go. For executions, this Missouri inmate with a rare condition that affects the blood vessels, well, he got a reprieve less than 2 hours before his execution this morning. But the state may end up killing him later today if the Supreme Court says that they can. Here's his story. Russell Bucklew would be the first U.S. inmate put to death since last month's botched execution in Oklahoma. Remember that one? The prisoner's vein collapsed while the drugs were being administered.
Then he had a heart attack.
Yeah, that was Clay Lockett. His vein collapsed. He writhed on the gurney before he eventually died of a heart attack, like 90 minutes later or 40 minutes later. So Russell Bucklew told the Associated Press on the phone last week he's scared of what might happen during his execution because of his funky veins. So they're talking about it today. The Supreme Court may decide. And
do you think the majority of people care? These guys are on death row for a reason.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Right? I don't. I think the majority of people probably don't have a lot of sympathy or empathy for the guy. But then there are the large percentage of people that just don't want executions to happen. So there, people are saying, okay, fine, let's use that.
Right.
And
but, you know,
here's
if you're
one more
gonna
guy
do
that doesn't
it,
get executed.
If you're going to do it right. Don't, you know, have him writhing around on the ground.
I liked when you said, in a flip kind of way, they might kill the guy later.
Right. Yeah. That's what it says. They may kill him later. The Supreme Court says they can. They're going to do
it.
That's
why I vote for the firing squad, which some lawmakers are trying to bring back, right?
Yeah, that's true. In a couple of states, they're actually considering that because the injections aren't working out so great. Or they could use rat poison like some students did.
Oh, so two elementary school kids have been arrested and charged with trying to kill a teacher by putting rat poison in her water bottle on her desk.
Yikes.
The teacher brought the water bottle to the principal's office Monday and then went to her doctor to be checked out. This was in Brooklyn. The suspects, ages 9 and 12.
The suspects.
I know. It's funny. I read it. I'm like, they're 9 and 12, so why are they in the same
class?
Because
if they were, yeah, true.
You know?
Maybe one has flunked a couple of semesters.
That's what I'm thinking.
But if they were 13 and 14, they would graduate to perpetrators.
Right.
Good one.
The parents of another student called the school to say her child witnessed a student putting something in the teacher's water bottle. So the kids are being charged with criminal possession of a weapon, which is the rat poison pellets, reckless endangerment, and attempted assault. They're going to be treated as juveniles, but one of the kids was on record saying he just wanted to see what would happen.
Oh, so he's curious.
Yeah.
That's
good.
He's going to be a scientist someday.
Yeah. I know.
He's going to make a super rat poison.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe that'll take the place of the drug cocktail on death row.
Exactly.
Well,
Speaking of cocktails, drink this. Listen to this. France. And you are the one that told me about this story.
Yes.
Who, Jay? You told
For
Jen
the
something?
First, he told me something about drinking.
Oh, okay.
Look at that.
That makes sense.
I like being the resident bartender around here.
All right,
France, Jen, what's happening?
France is no longer the number one wine place.
What do you mean by that? We drink more?
France is now the world's second largest consumer of wine, ceding the heavyweight title to us here in the U.S.
That's what I'm talking about.
It's from the International Organization of Vine and Wine. But here's the thing.
Vine and wine.
Yeah. We have more.
Creative.
We have way more people. So,
yes.
Of course, we drink more wine. The per capita thing will make you stagger. Listen to this. Americans drank 9.1 liters per person in 2011. France, 46.4.
Yeah. See, here's the thing. I think we drink wine differently.
Yeah.
Theirs is a little something extra at the dinner table, mm-hmm. right?
Or the breakfast table.
A glass of wine, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. But
mine's a whole box of wine after work.
There you go. It's a different mentality.
It's way different.
It's exactly what it is. People order a bottle of wine at dinner, and it's two people, and they drink the whole bottle. Then they consider another one.
Right.
In the United States.
Right. Well, you know, there's only four glasses of wine in a bottle, Phil.
I guess that's not enough
that's
for some people,
enough.
Chris. Is that right?
You're just getting warmed up after two
right?
glasses
really?
If you're splitting it with somebody.
Man, I am never drinking with you guys. I'm going to be the cheapest date ever. All right, so I think now we go to the baby deer.
Okay, this is a good story. A Minnesota man delivered a baby fawn after its mother was hit and killed by a car. This guy, Bill Schulte, said he saw a car hit a deer while he was driving over the weekend. He pulled over and saw that the deer was pregnant. And he says, I'm like, she's gone. The baby's in there kicking. Like, he can see that she's, you know.
Gross.
He's like, I got to do something. So he goes back to his truck and uses a box cutter. Okay.
Wow.
To open the dead deer's belly and slowly pulled out the baby fawn. A little
what?
C-section on the side of the road.
And he saved it and it's alive
yeah.
and it's good.
He drove the little fawn 30 miles to a rescue facility and they say he's thriving. I was looking at some video of it, of the little baby deer. He's really cute. He's thriving. He's drinking out of a bottle. They're going to do a little born free moment with him later when he's when he's ready to live on his
can
own.
Can we all say, oh.
Oh. Bambi.
Can I just ruin the moment?
Yeah.
On Saturday, a 31-year-old guy in Florida, you were talking about box cutters?
Yeah.
He used a box cutter to cut off price tags at Sears so he could shoplift, but he accidentally cut himself. Then he passed out from blood loss
no.
in the bathroom.
Oh, no.
He almost bled out. He pulled through, though. Police found him and all the stuff that he stole, plus a Xanax pill and some pot, and so now he's facing drug charges as
Sears,
well as petty
I mean, come on. Sears is cheap enough anyway. Why, if you're going to go big.
Don't judge.
Sears? You're going to steal from Sears?
Don't judge somebody's bank account. How dare you?
Just saying.
Well, come on. All right, so, Jay, today, the president, he is mad as heck, and he's not going to take it anymore when it comes to what?
He is upset over the Veteran Affairs scandal where that's out of Phoenix, and I'm not going to go into the entire story, but he made some statements voicing that anger, saying something must be done. And I'm sure you heard it here on KFWB.
Yes, it was live this morning.
Well, he ticked a bunch of people off with this speech. Not what he said, but when he said it. You see, the president came on right at the beginning of The Price is Right.
Oh, no.
Oh. People took to Twitter, social media. Is Obama really talking through the beginning of The Price is Right? Oh. We need better priorities. Why is Obama doing speeches during The Price is Right? Come on, man.
Are you serious? I mean, I remember we used to get calls when you interrupt the soap operas for breaking
right.
news. And then
right.
you put a little thing at the bottom that says you can see your soap at 2 a.m.
Right.
But people are like, my VCR didn't see that for 3 weeks. But honestly, The Price is Right?
People
There's no storyline there?
Yes, there is. People might miss Plinko.
Exactly. One woman writes, of course,
favorite.
This is the first morning I'm home and I just want to lay in bed and watch The Price is Right, but no, Obama's got to speak. One person on Twitter really
What'd they say?
Really took him to task because The Price is Right started trending on Twitter, which means millions and millions and millions of people were talking about this. Who cares about the VA hospital? Who cares about the corrupt, you know, system that's going on there?
It's Price is Right.
It's Price is Right,
oh,
like you said.
This is sad.
Plinko. So one person nailed it. Just nailed it.
Yeah.
Shouldn't the people complaining that Obama interrupted The Price is Right be at work?
Exactly.
Right, because wherever The Price is Right is on, that's during work hours, right?
Right.
You know, I think on the West Coast, that wasn't that speech at like 7:45?
It was.
It was at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah, it was close to the 8 o'clock hour.
Right,
this
so
morning.
this isn't us.
It's not
it's
West
not
Coast
people. Yeah.
It's all the East Coasters.
Oh, good, because
They're
I was going to ask.
Jersey.
I was just going to ask, may I just deport myself now?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
My goodness.
Well, it's not at like 10 a.m., right? That's like Price is Right is prime time, 10 a.m.,
yeah.
so
yeah.
it's probably like the central time zone.
All right, we're going to.
People love their Drew Carey, I guess.
Chris, you have a story about Willow Smith. That is mind-blowing. I cannot believe the authorities are involved, but you're going to have to hold on to that story for a moment because we're going to catch up with you on that in the next segment. And also, let me ask you this. Do you have a need for speed? The Indy 500 is coming up this Sunday, and you are going to hear from the fastest qualifier right here, next on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. So glad you tuned in to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends here on KFWB News Talk 980. We're here every weekday afternoon at 2, and you really do have to listen to the whole program because every segment we get a different story behind the story, something new. We get an expert, something you're going to learn something. You're going to hear from people that you don't normally hear from elsewhere. And in fact, we're going to speak to that exact point in a matter of moments. But first, Will and Jada and Willow and Child Services, Chris?
Yeah, it's an interesting saga. We remember that picture that was floating around on Instagram where young 13-year-old Willow Smith was laying in bed with a 20-year-old actor from Hannah, Montana, Moises Arias. And now an investigation has been formally opened by the Los Angeles Department of Child and Family Services, and it's being taken very seriously.
What do they want to try to find? I mean, wasn't this the photo ultimately was for a movie or a commercial or something like that, wasn't it?
Well, if you talk to Will and Jada, they say that the photo was just an expression of art, and it was all about innocent fun. They are not happy with their parenting skills being under scrutiny, but they're reportedly being very cooperative with authorities, which they seem like those type of people.
How long is this investigation going to go on?
Well, reports are saying that it won't just be one or two visits with the family. It could likely be an open investigation for at least a month out of extreme caution.
Is it possible then that Child Services could confiscate Willow, take her away, and put her in a foster home?
Highly unlikely,
Ooh.
Phil. Highly unlikely.
That would be the scandal of
ridiculous.
The century.
It does seem ridiculous.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
I wanted you guys to hear what Jada said to the paparazzi when she was asked about it. She said, here's the deal. There was nothing sexual about that picture or the situation. You guys are projecting your trash onto it, and you're acting like covert pedophiles, and that's not cool.
Oh.
It's true. I mean, there's nothing to this picture.
Right. Yeah, if you look at it. I mean, there's some initial shock because she's 13 and he's 20. I get that whole thing,
yeah.
But...
People. Right, but they're just hanging out. They're just chilling
think
and hanging
the
out.
Children,
Certainly
no.
not. Yeah, Child Services.
I don't know. I think Child Services has more important things to do in the L.A. County than
yeah. It
that's
just takes
right.
one
I mean,
person
honestly.
To complain.
Those are state resources being used for something
right.
that doesn't seem necessary.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that, that's for sure. But right now, it's a great time of year for auto racing. Because this Sunday is the running of the 98th Indianapolis 500, and during qualifying, one man drove his car faster than anybody else, and so now he is the pole sitter, and he's on the line with us right now. Ed Carpenter, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys.
How's everything going? You up for Sunday?
I am. I'm feeling good about things. You know, it's been last weekend was great. We've had a good couple weeks of preparation for the race, and I'm looking forward to it.
Now, at Indy, the way I understand it, and you tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm getting into the racer's head a little bit here, there are two separate races. There's the one against the clock that puts you on the pole, and that was qualifying last weekend, and then there's the one coming up on Sunday. Are there actually two different mindsets when you come into Indy?
For sure. You know, qualifying is the first part of it, and you know, you always want to qualify as well as you can, and it was great for our team to get my car on the pole and be the fastest, and my teammate was ninth, so we've shown we have good speed. But then when it comes time to prepare for the race, you know, it's different. You know, when you're qualifying, you're the only car on the track. All you have to do is worry about making your car as fast as you can for four laps, and then when it comes to the race, you know, we'll run about 30 laps between pit stops. So you need to worry about taking care of your tires over that stint, and also, you know, dealing with 32 other car and drivers on the track and making sure your car handles well.
Right. So qualifying, you're basically just putting the pedal to the metal and not hitting anything. That's kind of the way you should think about it, right?
And the race is more like a chess game.
Exactly.
Exactly. That's a good way of putting it.
Hey, let me ask you this, Ed. When you qualified, how fast did you go?
My four-lap average was 231 miles an hour.
Wow. That's your average?
Okay. All right. Here's what I want to know. And I think a lot of people want to know this because I feel fairly confident in saying that just about everybody listening to us right now has never driven faster than maybe 120. And so when you're doing 231, what's that like?
It's a whole lot of fun.
Attaboy!
Some people call us crazy, but we love going fast, and you know that's a big part of the reason why most of us are in Indy cars, because we love the speed and the competition. But it's a thrill. It's a lot of fun. It's nerve wracking. There's a lot of anxiety because when you get the car set up to go that fast, you're taking basically all the downforce off of it. The car is on the edge of losing contact with the road all the time.
You know, another thing that I'm pretty certain people don't understand, because the cars we get out of the showroom and drive on the freeway pretty much do everything for us. We just need to be awake and alert, and we'll get from point A to point B. But you're an athlete out there. You've got to really manhandle that vehicle, because from what I understand, you can drive it too slow or too fast. You could turn it too hard. You could do all sorts of things. And if you don't do it just right, you're going to get airborne and flip, or it's something worse, right?
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of things that can happen. But, yeah, I mean, we are athletes. The cars are very physical to drive. They don't have power steering. So the steering wheel is very heavy. But, you know, it's all worth it.
How do you maintain that adrenaline? I mean, if you're going that fast and it never really gets old, I mean, you're flying. How do you maintain that amount of adrenaline for so long?
I mean, it takes a high level of focus to drive these cars, because, you know, there's such a small margin of error all the time, especially when there's other cars on track. So, you know, not only are you having to worry about your car and not making your own car, but you also have to be aware of what's going on around you and avoid other people's mistakes constantly. So it takes a high level of focus, and you know that goes right back into the training part of it, being physically in good shape, just so your body doesn't break down.
All right, I want to talk a little driving strategy. You've got your guy in the ninth position, so you guys are you're listening to the same team on your headset. You know where you are on the track. You know who's around you. You know what spot you're in. You know how close you are to the next pit stop and all these sorts of things. But how much do you work together, or alone for that matter, to keep the guys that are right behind you from getting any kind of an advantage? Are you constantly kind of, okay, he goes to the right a little bit, you go to the right a little
right.
bit. He goes to the left, that sort of thing. And do you help each other pass other guys from time to time as well?
Not really. I mean, the teamwork element of it comes in the preparation and getting ready for the race. Once the race starts, you know, we're each running our own race, and we're each trying to win. You know, there's times where you could be together and help each other a little bit, but for the most part, you know, I won't be thinking about my teammate when I'm out.
There's no
my job.
No,
I want to win.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
No, there's no bumping guys like those NASCAR drivers.
No,
you know. those cars would disintegrate.
Which brings up the point. You better look out. Kurt Busch is out there on the track. He might come around the corner and try to bump you a little bit.
Does he know the rules?
Yeah.
He knows the rules. He knows the rules. He's done a great job this month. He did have a little bit of an accident Friday practice. And got into the wall, but he's been doing a great job, and it's just a different style of racing, and you know, he's adapted very well.
That's good. And one more question about taking us back to the showroom metaphor for the average driver. You know, we spend 30, 40 grand on a car. Kurt Busch wrecked his car, And what kind of dollar are you talking about just to put four wheels on the track at the start?
I mean the car costs about $500,000. I'm sure his damage the other day was, you know, well over $100,000.
So the deductible is covered already, right?
Good one.
No insurance on these bad boys.
Whoa!
I'll take a Rolls Royce for $500,000 any day over a go-kart.
Well,
thank you guys, Ray.
Ed Carpenter, we're going to be watching you. It's exhilarating to watch the race and watch you go for so long, and you're just turning left, right?
One way of looking at it, but there's a lot that goes into it.
I know there is. We're not belittling it at all. It's amazing what you do out there. And we wish you the best of luck, and hope you get to drink something nice up on a podium at the end of this thing.
Yeah, hopefully a nice cold glass of milk. That's what we get when we win Indy.
There you go. Enjoy the Brickyard, and thanks for talking with us here on the program, Ed Carpenter.
Thank you, guys.
How about that, huh? That guy drives fast. Faster than me. Hey, are you ready to be a rock star in your career? You'll hear from a man who says that he can set your career on fire based on what he's observed in the music industry, watching rock stars soar to the top and make it all the way down to the bottom. He's learned a thing or two, and he's going to impart that upon you and your career. You need to hear it next, right here on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends on KFWB News Talk 980. Thanks for tuning in to As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends. Stories behind the stories here on KFWB, News Talk 980, and we help you out anytime we possibly can. In fact, joining us now is music industry insider, author of the book, How to Unleash Your Personal Brand and Set Your Career on Fire, Steve Jones. Hello.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
Excellent. Much better now that you're on.
It's a pleasure to be on.
Well, great. Thank you. You've worked alongside bands and the record labels. You've launched careers or been around careers that have launched. You've witnessed the rise and fall of rock stars. But what's the essential thing you've learned that everybody should know about themselves watching all of that happen?
Well, what I've learned in seeing so many rock star careers rise and fall and sometimes rise again is that we all need to pay more attention to our personal brands. And that's why I wrote the book, and it's the second of two. The first book was called Brand Like a Rock Star. This one, Start You Up. Both of them deal with the idea that we need to pay more attention to branding. We are, as individuals, carrying this brand around with us. People think things about us and say things about us, and they have perceptions about us that can harm or help our careers, our lives, our profitability, our happiness. And if we look at certain instances in rock history, we can extract all kinds of great lessons and apply them to building a personal brand that will actually help our careers grow and make us more profitable and happier.
I buy into this brand idea, but I think for a lot of people, they think, okay, brand, is that like a product on a shelf? I mean, explain what you think.
Well, a brand is just a perception. It's an idea that people hold in their heads or an emotion people feel in their hearts. It's what they say about you when you're not in the room. It is it's the aura you carry around. And when people say your name, what comes to mind? Is it a positive or a negative? The thing is, even if you don't totally buy into the idea of branding, you can't deny that people have perceptions that they're carrying around. And that really is the essence of the brand, whether you're talking about the perceptions people have of, you know, Nike or Apple or Coke, or the perceptions people have of Phil, of Steve, and anyone else.
Yeah. All right. So it's not, oh, look at that guy, I want to pour him on my food. That's not the kind of
face on my shirt.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in your book, you talk about the five P's of personal branding. Give us a sense of what those are.
Well, they're the five P's of personal branding are positioning, presentation, passion, purpose, and profit. So positioning is your story. It's what makes you unique and separates you from everybody else. And for, you know, I use the example of Bruce Springsteen in rock history as a guy with a real great position. His story is unique. He grew up in the 50s and 60s in rural New Jersey, experienced the economic downturn of the 70s and the post-Vietnam era, and became sort of this champion of every man. He became the blue-collar hero. And he carries that story with him. He's never afraid to tell it everywhere he goes, the songs he writes, the themes of his shows, all based around that kind of, you know, that kind of blue-collar hero mentality. That story is a great position. And all of us have stories from our lives and make us who we are that are unique. And often we're afraid to tell them because we want to be more like everybody else. We forget that really having a unique story is absolutely key to getting ahead. And then presentation is how you choose to tell that story. I mean, different stories are told different ways. I look back in rock history and look at a guy like Buddy Holly, who told his story using a really unique pair of glasses and influenced an entire generation of musicians. And Buddy Holly wore those glasses, and John Lennon wore glasses on stage because he was a big Buddy Holly fan. And then Elton John made glasses part of his image because he was a big John Lennon fan. And so it went. Your presentation is how you tell your story. Your passion is how you turn your love of what you do into your career, or how you find more love in your career and what you do. And your purpose is how you give back and grow your career by mentoring others or giving back to other causes. And of course, profits, the last P, is how you turn all these things into profit, whether profit for you means an enriched life, a happier life, or whether it means, as it does for a lot of us, just more money.
Yeah, see, that all makes a lot of sense to me. The way you explain it makes sense, especially the Bruce Springsteen example, because when you think about all the musicians out there, I mean, these days, some hipster in skinny jeans and bedroom hair comes out, and really all he is a musician out of a cookie cutter. But Springsteen's brand is larger than just the title musician.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's a spokesman for a certain kind of belief and lifestyle, and he's not afraid that, you know, he does a lot of political stuff and aligns him with the political left. He's not afraid that that might alienate some people on the political right because he knows that he has to stand for something.
So when you talk about examples of these rock stars who have this larger than life brand that people can just, they can see the brand and they could believe in it and buy into it, is Springsteen your favorite example, or do you have somebody else?
Well, there are a number that keep coming up because they are so solid, and Springsteen's a great example, but I think there's two other ones that transcend all of them, and they are Kiss and Jimmy Buffett. And both of those bands and performers are very different. Both of those brands are very different, but they have some great lessons. And one of them, of course, for Kiss is the fact that you got to stand out, and you can't be like everybody else. And Kiss was, when they came out, you know, they showed the world something it had never seen before with the makeup and the fire and the spitting blood and the whole imagery. And that was something nobody had ever seen, and it forced people to pay attention.
Yeah, and Gene Simmons has perfected the final P, the profit.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can use Gene Simmons and Kiss for pretty much each example because they just know how to build a brand. And then Jimmy Buffett is a great example because he's only really had one hit song. Margaritaville was his only hit, you know, 208.
Oh, Cheeseburger in Paradise, sir. I beg to differ.
Well, if you're a Parrothead, you can probably list off a whole bunch. But really, Margaritaville was the only chart hit. Yet every year he goes on tour, he makes millions of dollars. He's turned the beach bum lifestyle into an absolute industry. And the thing to remember about Jimmy Buffett is that he's giving people an experience. There's something tangible about his brand. He's the beach bum guy. And when you go to a show, you're escaping from the mundane life and being a beach bum for a little while. When you go to a Margaritaville restaurant and overpay for that cheeseburger in paradise on the menu, you know, you're doing that because you want to, for a couple of hours, suspend reality and be a beach bum. So we need to give our customers an experience beyond just an interaction. It has to be more than that.
Another question for Steve Jones, the book How to Unleash Your Personal Brand and Set Your Career on Fire. And Jay, it's your turn.
So what happens when you need to change your brand? Like this kid, this jackass Justin Bieber, he's kind of, you know, been in and out of court now, and he's been not being the teen idol that he should be. I mean, how would you apply that to my life? If I go to a Christmas party and I have a few too many cocktails, now I've kind of got that brand of being that guy. How do you change that?
Well, it's really difficult because once perceptions are formed, they're almost impossible to change. But a good example recently is Miley Cyrus. And there's an artist who has done what Justin Bieber's been unable to do. She's transcended her image as a teen star and managed to make herself into a viable pop star with adults. And it was a very carefully crafted progression. Her management team knew exactly what they were doing. When, you know, a couple of years ago, there were some racy pictures right when she turned 17. And then the year after that, there was a picture of her possibly smoking marijuana at a birthday party. And then there was a video that, yes, definitely she was smoking pot. And then, it, you know, everything was step by step. They gradually introduced all these adult attributes into her brand that resulted in then, you know, all the controversy that's come her way recently with the naked video of Wrecking Ball and so on, and this sort of sexualized image that she's created for herself. That was a carefully crafted step-by-step process, and they knew exactly what to do at each point by gradually introducing new elements to the brand. I think Bieber's people have just, you know, they've got, as you said, a punk who's kind of out of control. And instead of growing into an adult star, I think everyone's kind of looking at him and going, dude, get it together.
Right. Yeah, before the plane hits the ground. Exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us some insight. I know we're just scratching the surface here, but the books will be helpful. Steve Jones is the name, and the most recent book, How to Unleash Your Personal Brand and Set Your Career on Fire. Thank you very much for your thoughts on this.
It's my pleasure. Have a wonderful afternoon.
All right. Thanks. You too. Wow. How about that, huh? Ready to be a rock star?
Yes.
But you want to strap on the guitar, don't you?
No, I just want their paychecks.
Right. But I get the branding thing, though. In fact, I've always kind of preached that idea that, especially if you use social media, if you're a brand on social media as opposed to just somebody who says, hey, look what I'm doing today.
This is what I'm eating for lunch.
I'm having a grilled cheese.
Yeah.
You know, I don't care. Shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my brand, though. Don't bash it.
Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Ooh,
my
look
bad.
What I just got.
All right. Speaking of brands, here are a couple of brands. Tonight, the Los Angeles Kings will try to steal one from Chicago. In Chicago, that is, against the Blackhawks in the NHL's Western Conference Finals. So up next, you'll hear from the LA Times pool reporter, Kings pool reporter, Helene Elliott. Love talking with her. She's in the Windy City. She'll be here live right here on As We See It with Phil Hewlett and friends on KFWB News Talk 980.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. If you ever miss an episode of As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends, we have them posted as podcasts at philhewlettandfriends.com. But thanks for tuning in to today's program. Is it a program? Is it an episode? Is it a show? Is it
I'm having an episode. I don't know.
It's an epigram.
It's just awesome,
an
Phil.
Epigram. I like that. Awesome. All right. Moving along. I'm over it. I really am. I've come to terms with the Ducks' second-round loss to the Kings, and I wish the boys in silver and black well. They are in Chicago tonight for Game 2, down 1-0 to the Chicago Blackhawks, and joining us live is L.A. Times sports reporter. She knows her hockey, knows her Kings, Helene Elliott. Hello. How's Chicago? Hello.
Hey, it's great, Phil.
It is
you're over it, Phil. I see what you did there.
Yeah? Did we hang up on her on purpose? No. We're going to call her back. We'll call her back. In the meantime, we'll catch up on a couple of other stories. In fact, there's one I'm particularly interested in, and it has to do with a guy's ear.
Oh,
say
no.
What?
Chris, can you help me with this one?
Dodgers minor league?
Yes.
Is that what you're talking
exactly.
about?
Exactly.
A couple of players from the Dodger minor league camp. Miguel Olivo and Alex Guerrero got in a fight. Apparently in the eighth inning, Olivo threw a shot over to Guerrero to tag a guy out, and Guerrero missed the shot. On the way back to the dugout, Olivo starts to pick a fight with him. Now, these two start fighting, He blindsides him, actually, punches him in the jaw. They start fighting. Olivo bites, allegedly, about half of his ear off.
Oh, no.
They can't just see that and kind of estimate the right. amount of ear that was gone and not say allegedly anymore?
So or went is all the, Tyson
the
on
biting
him.
Is alleged,
it,
right?
Well, it's still an early story, and I don't want to get myself in any trouble by claiming too much of his ear has been bitten off.
Okay.
Just throw in a few allegedly.
Yeah,
in there.
I see reportedly.
Sprinkle it in liberally.
A couple interesting things about this. He has not had the ear sewn back on yet, but that's apparently what's going to happen. And Guerrero says he is not pressing charges. This guy, Olivo, has Olivo.
Yeah.
He's had some anger issues in the past, so this isn't anything new for him. And Guerrero, I think he's dropping it because he just signed a $28 million four-year contract with the Dodgers.
He can buy all the ears he needs.
Right. He can get a prosthetic ear and probably doesn't need his name drugged through the mud
until
right
he tries
now.
To put on Very glasses.
Good. Amazing. All right. I think we have Helene Elliott on the line now. Yes? No? Yes? Hello? We lost her again. All right. Very good. We're full of stories. We have nothing but stories to go to.
You really don't like the Kings, do you, Phil?
I think it's even if you think you're over it, I think there's something happening. It's like the gremlins are causing this to happen on behalf of your Ducks.
Now we're going to try one more time. Okay. Helene, do we have you this time?
Third time.
I hope so.
Oh
my goodness.
Here.
What's in the water there in Chicago? My goodness.
I don't know.
Didn't just get back from one of those Navy Pier booze cruises, did you?
No. And the river turns green only on St. Patrick's Day. So.
I gotcha. All right. Let's get to the Kings and the Blackhawks. The Kings don't seem to have a problem being down a game or two or three. Did they carry themselves that way today at practice?
Yeah, they think that they played pretty well and in game one, and anything that they didn't do well is easily fixed. And that's kind of the attitude you have to have. I mean, you can't come out of a game and going, oh, my God, we have no hope. We can't do anything better. We can't do anything well. We'll never win because then you'll just never win. They're confident. As you said, they've been through this before. Nobody's panicking. They have the experience of going through it, and they're very confident.
Yeah, but at the moment they're playing a Chicago Blackhawks team that doesn't lose in the postseason. So talk about what makes Chicago such a difficult team to beat right now.
Well, Chicago's added a really solid defensive element to its game. I mean, they were the leading scorer in the NHL during the regular season, and now they're the best defensive team in the playoffs, which is really pretty remarkable. Their goaltender, people used to say that their goaltender, Corey Crawford, was their weakness, and he certainly has not been their weakness in these playoffs. He's been tremendous. So they're a very formidable team, but nobody is perfect. Any team could be beaten, and I think you have to kind of look at it and say that Daryl Sutter, his strategy and his adjustments got them out of helped get them out of a 3-0 hole in the first round, and it helped them come from behind to beat the Ducks in the second round. So this team is able to adapt, and I'm sure fans are very confident too.
Yeah, I would think so, and talking about the Ducks, Game 7, the Kings absolutely bottled up the Ducks at Honda Center, and I can't imagine too many teams beating the kind of play that the Kings put on the ice that night. Can the Kings bring that game plan again tonight or some other night, or do they reserve that for Game 7s?
Yeah, I mean, the Kings want to play a low-scoring game. It serves them better to play a low-scoring game. But, you know, Chicago is very, very good. It's, against the Ducks, the Kings found the Ducks' weaknesses and intestines, taking some penalties maybe, and, just burned their defense a little bit. And that's going to be much harder to do against the Blackhawks.
Has Coach Sutter said much about the strategy for tonight's game?
Yeah, you want to ask him, like, the secret code to his ATM? You have a better chance of getting that.
I know it. And even if he did say something, it's going to be he has an interesting dry sense of humor when you do get a couple of sentences out of him.
Yeah, he's a little gruff sometimes, but I think he basically has a good heart. And when this time of year you get a lot of people descending from out of town, or people who don't know Daryl very well and they don't know what little buttons, if you push, that will set Daryl off.
Right.
So it's kind of funny sometimes, yeah.
It is. And how about there in United Center in Chicago? Talk about the noise, the fans, the home ice advantage.
Well, the one great thing they have, and anybody who's seen it will tell you, you get shivers, is the anthem singing and how everybody here, the entire crowd, stands on its feet and applauds during the anthem, and it gets so loud. And the anthem singer has a wonderful voice, and it just is so stirring and just gets the team off to the Blackhawks off to a great start. And I think it gives the visiting team energy, too. You can't stand through that and watch that and not get energized. It's just an incredible display, and it's a great ritual that they have here.
We'll look for your coverage in tomorrow's Los Angeles Times. Helene Elliott, thank you very much for spending some time, and we'll watch the game tonight and hope the best for the Kings.
Very good. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
All right. There she goes, Los Angeles Times writer. She always is fair to the Ducks, I must say.
Hey, Phil, can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, sure.
Who knows the likelihood of it, though it is probable. Do you think that the Los Angeles Kings and the New York Rangers is the biggest national draw for a championship, for a finals match?
Oh, for hockey, yeah. Certainly. You have the number one and the number two market. I think that would be huge for the sport. But here's the thing. The Kings would love to play the Montreal
Canadiens,
Les Habitants, because that would take them back to 1993 when the Kings were still playing at the Forum, and there was the miracle on Manchester where with just a few minutes left, they scored a whole ration of goals to beat Montreal, but it wasn't the final game of the series. Montreal ultimately won the cup that year. So the Kings would love to have a rematch of 93. So for hockey fans, that would be huge. All right, here's what I want to do. I want to find out, Jay, about this story that involves bicycles and parents. And if you would, please, make us parents angry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you are if you're a parent and you have a kid of bike riding age, and I'm talking bicycle, you don't want to...
Bike riding learning age,
and you're having trouble teaching your child how to ride a bike. You've got them on the training wheels, and they're going up and down the street, and they're loving it. Okay, now it's time to take the training wheels off. You put them on the bike, you let them go, crash and burn, they scream, they run, they never want to do it again.
It's a beautiful part of life for parenting.
It's a defining moment.
Now you can hire a coach to do it for you.
No!
That's my gig.
People in New York are actually advertising, I will coach your kid on how to ride a bike so you don't have to.
Again with the East Coast.
How much are they getting for that, does it say?
The story does not say, but I'm sure it varies. But a private lesson starts, I know this, for one flyer, $90.
Wow.
My goodness. And what happens if the kid falls and scrapes his knee and cries?
See, I don't know. There should be some sort of insurance policy
somewhere. Get out of there quick.
You sign over your firstborn or your first bicycle.
Pay first.
Hey, we love your comments. Email us feedback@philhewlettandfriends.com. Twitter, we're As We See It Show. Thanks to Mike Stark, our executive producer, for Jennifer Bjorklund, Jay Campidonia, Chris Martin. I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk to you next time when we call it As We See It with Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553.